All right, well, speak for yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
Yes, sir.
We're joined today by Fox NFL analyst Mark Schlereth. Coming up, we'll tell you what to make of a woman making football history.
And if Kyrie is really the cause of the Celtics' struggles.
But we're going to start today with a very big story. Sponsored by Papa John's, two medium one-topping pizzas, just $6 each. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move to Dallas, where Jason Witten shocked the sports world today, deciding to unretire and rejoin the Cowboys for the 2019 season. Witten, as we all remember, had a challenging debut season in the Monday Night Football booth, but according to the tight end, it was the love of the game that convinced him to come back, saying, quote, "The fire inside of me to compete and play this game is just burning too strong. This team has a great group of rising young stars, and I want to help them make a run at a championship. This was completely my decision, and I'm very comfortable with it." All right, the question here is, what do we really think drove Witten back to the field? Was it more about his failure in the broadcast booth or more about his desire to play? And I think if things had went well in the broadcast booth, this wouldn't be happening.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. This may have been the first time that Jason Witten has experienced failure. And it's amazing when you talk about a future Hall of Famer who steps out of that comfort zone and is looking for greener pastures in the booth to escape the hits, gets in the booth. That doesn't go so well. Now all of a sudden you're in harm's way in the booth. So the fire that's burning in him is really that hell he was taking in that booth, because it was not going well. And I'm not calling someone out here, but I am going to bring up Jerry Rice and his issues as a broadcaster. He called that career short as well for being a not only future Hall of Famer and Hall of Famer, but GOAT. And Jerry Rice had his struggles in the broadcast booth. And I remember talking to him, and he was just like, "This is not for me, bro. I mean, it's just, it is what it is." And it's crazy that Jason Witten walked away, probably encouraged by Tony Romo and his success, and that's your best friend. You're like, "Oh, yeah, I could do this all day." And then as you're doing it, you're taking hits, everyone is criticizing you. Then you watch a L.A. Charger game, you see Antonio Gates out there still getting it. You're like, "Wait a minute." And then you see a New England Patriots game, and you see Gronk all beat up, broke down, run blocking and getting respect and credit. I think he started to get incentivized to come back to the game because the older, broken down tight end was still having an impact on the game.
You know, having the opportunity to do both studio stuff and to call games. Calling games, exponentially more difficult.
True.
It's hard.
True.
And I reached out to Jason during the course of the season because I know he was getting bashed. And I was like, "Listen, here's the deal. You educate me about the game." And he does. Now, the articulation part of the game, that will come. That takes time. You know, he was put in a position where he's on Monday Night Football. He's not in a position to learn how to do that where nobody's watching anymore. You're doing a regional game. You're on Monday Night Football. So he's going to get the lion's share of the criticism. I think that's part of what drove him. I think the other part is he's always had the open door with the Dallas Cowboys, and they are a talented young team. They should get their starting center back from his sickness from last year. They should be a team that can contend in the NFC East. So this is a situation to me where it's a little bit of both. Look at, man, I missed the game. We all missed the game. He's got an opportunity to come back and play the game. He was still playing when he left at an incredibly high level. He just has.
Don't do that.
Oh, no, he was.
No.
Like, he's
those
not,
are career lows outside of his rookie year in many categories. That was not the best Jason Witten.
He is still able to find his way open to get himself. I mean, he's not going to outrun people. He's savvy. Like, he's still playing that way. And he's always been, in my estimation, one of the better blocking tight ends in football.
Yes.
So, to me, I'm like, you can come back there. You've got open door policy. You've got a chance to win the NFC East. You get in the playoffs. Anything could happen. Why not?
I think this was all pretty much agreed upon when he left. If it doesn't go well, Tony, you can, Jason, you can always come back.
Yes.
And he's taken that option. And I don't want to even beat him up because they're trying to sell this as, hey, it's just football and I wanted to play football. At the end of the day, man, Jason Witten struggled at one of the hardest jobs in broadcasting. He came right off the football field and tried it. This is no crime. He doesn't need to be vilified or even more ridiculed than what he already suffered mm-hmm. in the past footballs. So I don't have a problem with him having a very soft landing. It's not because I think ESPN was going to move on from him. Mm. And if they want to give him the soft landing of, hey, no, we didn't fire you, you went back to football, Jason Witten deserves it. He's earned that. And no problem selling it. The second layer to this, though, is the real question is he going to help the Dallas Cowboys this coming season?
I think he is. Mark touched on it. His run blocking ability is going to help, especially with Ezekiel Elliott there in the running game. His pass catching ability, not always based on skill set measurables, but just the intelligence and the savviness to get open, to read coverage, to read a defense. Yes, that's going to be beneficial. I tell you, when you have Amari Cooper, it's a lot different than having Dez Bryant, who was struggling to separate. It's going to be the lid off of the defense, so there's going to be holes in that secondary. Then you talk about a guy who's going to work with a better version of Dak Prescott. I think he's a better quarterback now than he was a couple of years ago in terms of accuracy and playing the position. So all that and the juice is there with this Cowboys team, kind of like Dax and Ezekiel's rookie year. I think he's going to be a veteran presence that helps them.
Yeah, how important is it for a young quarterback to have a guy that's a security blanket for him? Mm-hmm. A guy that he knows on third down he can convert with, a guy that he knows that it's not a big risk. I mean, and Jason Witten is the consummate professional. So that part, just the leadership standpoint and those things, I think help the Cowboys. The third down conversion stuff, not only on the end of the line of scrimmage, but he's a motion run, the lead ISO. I mean, he's always been exceptional at that stuff. He's never gotten the credit he deserves for the run blocking part of this. And that's what this team is based on, right? It's based on running the football with Zeke and then making Dak, you know, convert on third downs and third down in short situations to be in an optimal kind of position. So I think this does help the Dallas Cowboys offense.
I think it helps in the sense that this to me is an indication to everybody in that organization. The 53 guys that'll be on the final roster, the extra 40 guys that they have on the team right now, Jerry Jones is all in. He doesn't have another chip. Well, the next chip he's going to put in is when he gives Dak a contract that's probably too much money, which will be to me, Jason Witten coming back says Jerry Jones, everybody's back's against the wall. Jason Garrett, Dak Prescott. Hey, Dak, you got no excuse.
Yeah.
We brought back a Hall of Fame tight end. We got Amari Cooper. Mm-hmm. We got a defense.
We got a draft coming up. Let's go.
Yeah. And so it's like we're here to win a Super Bowl. Will it work? And I'm a little concerned about, but I like the move of bringing Witten back because of the level of pressure that will be on everybody. Even if the guy only catches 40, 50 balls this year, 4 or 5 touchdowns, I do think his leadership, he is a Dallas Cowboy, legendary leader, veteran present that I think will help not just Dak comfort, but for Jason Garrett to have another one of those type soldiers in the locker room. And so I like the move for those reasons.
Yeah, he's an enforcer. We always talk about the Patriots in the Patriot way, and how Tom Brady becomes the deputy sheriff who's executing and enforcing everything that Belichick wants in terms of culture. That's who Jason Witten is. I played with him in Dallas. The guy, consummate pro, is an understatement of how Jason Witten approaches the game. Never anything extra in terms of bringing in distractions or noise. Always about his business, always about his work. And what's his greatest ability? Availability. Missed one game in his career. Think about that. At that position, the way he plays it and how gritty he is, only one game missed.
And think about this. You know, today's game, you almost have to get permission from the players to coach him. Hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right? So in New England, Bill Belichick can rip Tom Brady in front of everybody, and guess what? Everybody's got to fall in line, because if they can do it to Tom Brady, they can do it to all of us.
Yes.
Jason Witten gives you that kind of guy where if I can rip Jason Witten, I can rip anybody. I've got permission to coach my team. I think that's important.
I think the confidence of the team will elevate because of this, because, again, Jason Witten will get in that locker room and he'll tell, hey, the only reason why I came back is because this is a Super Bowl team. You think I'm coming back here to go 8-8 or bounce out of the playoffs in the first round? He's gonna get in that locker room. Guys, I covered the entire NFL last year. From the Monday Night Football booth, I saw film on everybody in the league. We have the best team in football. I've seen everything.
Yeah.
And I think some guys are going to buy into it. Jason Witten, and this is saying a mouthful, but there's two different ways to be a Ray Lewis. There's the emotional, run your mouth guy.
Hit the squirrel on him.
Yeah, the whole deal. Yeah. Jason Witten is like the other end of the spectrum for that. He's got with the Cowboys organization, he's got a Ray Lewis quality that I think when he talks and he delivers his message, those guys are going to listen.
Yeah, but this is an NFL locker room. So when Witten comes in there tomorrow, I came back because I saw every team, and we're going to win a championship here. Somebody's going to say, nah, you came back, you suck. That's how they're
going to. That'll be the joke.
They're going to come back and you wasn't good at what you did.
That'll be the joke.
And you know what? That's a good joke. Take it, Jason, because I'm sure that humble pie is going to refuel you. It's going to recharge you. You come back here, you want to get some of that ego back that was being taken on a weekly basis from him being exposed. Unfair position he was put in. I started on ESPN News midnight with three viewers. That's how you're supposed to climb this mountain, man. They threw that boy out there to dry.
February isn't just about one supersized football game. On Spotify, there's thousands of free sports podcasts that agonize over the preseasons, offseason, and plain old regular seasons of nearly every sport imaginable. Basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, curling, and even hurling. Yes, that's a real sport. Now it's so easy to stay updated with the latest rumors, predictions, and scorching hot takes from some of your favorite game's biggest names. So take it one episode at a time and give 110% of your attention to the thousands of free sports podcasts on Spotify, because the best offense is a good podcast.
It's time for the Whitlog, a little delayed today. The Tony Harris story is too good to be true. No, seriously, it's too good to be true. It's the epitome of fake news. If you listen to the mainstream media, Tony Harris made history yesterday. She's the first woman skills position player to sign a national letter of intent to play college football. The Detroit native turned down five other schools and signed with Central Methodist University to play defensive back. Her football scholarship is being celebrated absolutely everywhere. Yesterday, she was a guest on the Today Show. ESPN, the Associated Press, the Sporting News, and virtually every other mainstream media outlet trumpeted her history-making accomplishment. Most outlets included a mention of her goal to one day play in the NFL for the Seattle Seahawks. Dwayne Brown and Frank Clark, members of the Seahawks, tweeted congratulatory messages. So did the NFL's official Twitter page. The league is seemingly all in on the Tony Harris story. Even before she landed her historic scholarship, Harris was featured in a Super Bowl car commercial.
They said she'd never get to the next level. Never inspire a new generation. Never get a football scholarship. Yeah, people have made a lot of assumptions about Tony.
But I've never been a big fan of assumptions.
There's a lot of money invested in the Tony Harris story. She's the Rosa Parks of football, except she isn't. She's the tool in the fake news propaganda machine that, in this case, wants to sell two myths. One, there are no biological differences between man and woman. Two, we've removed enough masculinity from football that it's now safe for women to play. This is all irresponsible and needs to stop before Tony Harris or some other young woman gets seriously hurt and does real damage to the brand of football. No one in the media will point out this because Tony Harris was selected for this role because she's the perfect media prop. She checks all the boxes. She's black, she's attractive, she's a cancer survivor, she's a Christmas story. Only the Grinch would ruin a Christmas story. I'm not the Grinch. I just believe in truth. I think these kind of rigged stories do far more harm than good. I'm afraid the 5'6", 160-pound, 22-year-old Harris is going to get hurt while being used as a political football. We've seen heavily muscled men and boys paralyzed in this game. She's literally risking her life. I'm afraid other girls, parents, and coaches will never hear the truth of the Harris story and will recklessly chase football fame and a scholarship. Tony Harris's greatest accomplishment as a high school football player was winning Homecoming Queen in a token start. Don't blame me. That's what she told the Detroit Free Press, saying, quote, "That was the best part of high school football for me. I started that game and I was homecoming queen." She enrolled at the University of Toledo and planned to walk on the football team. An ovarian cancer diagnosis ended that dream. After she recovered, Harris somehow moved to Hollywood, the land of movie scripts and fictional narratives, and eventually wound up on the East Los Angeles Community College football team. She was on the team for 2 years this past season. She recorded 3 tackles. Based on her huddle highlight reel, she was occasionally on the kickoff coverage teams. The highlights tell the real story. Toni Harris did not earn a football scholarship. She was given a national letter of intent to sign as a publicity stunt so that football can improve its relationship with hardcore feminists. It's not progress. It's dangerous charity and propaganda. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports analyst Mark Schlereth and Jim Jackson. Marcellus, I will start with you. Do you agree with me that this is dangerous and irresponsible to celebrate this story?
I do agree with you. I agree with you. What I loved about a football locker room is that it wasn't PC. Once you got in that locker room, we're going to just call it and say it like it is. And I'm going to say it like it is. This won't be PC. Looks like a great person. I think it's going to be a good story. It won't last long because you got to perform beyond that. But that's a bad football player. And I'm going to say this. We used to joke with my friends. My friends clown me. I went to Columbia. Oh, man, I thought you were going to go to big school. You sorry. I watched this film. I watched these highlights. I watched every clip that was out there on social media. And I was rooting. I was like, oh, come on, give me something, Tony. The Antoinette, let me see it. I know this is going to be special. But when I see in the caption that, okay, this is my highlights, I know this isn't much, I'm already like, oh, I got too many homeboys who used to say this ain't much. I was like, yeah, because you ain't good. And then I watched it. And by the third highlight, we were in practice with T-shirts on. I've never in my life seen a highlight tape that had someone in practice with T-shirts on. So what you're saying, which was agenda-focused and based, and is why she has her 15 minutes of fame, Monet Davis style in a different way, where we blew that up to the point where I was watching Little League World Series, and I'm hearing people say, she may compete against the collegiate, maybe even go pro. Who knows where she could go? The sky's the limit. And I was like, okay. And we know where that has landed in terms of story. I think this story, once the game start, she's going to go back to a role where, unfortunately, there won't be any substance to support the story, and it'll just fizzle away.
Yeah, I think it's a great story. I think it's cool. I think it's great. Good for her. I mean, the bottom line, what I know about this game is you got to compete. You got to play. Doesn't matter where you come from. And if you can play, they'll find you. You'll get an opportunity. Based upon the same stuff that you watch, I'm like, there's not a lot of substance there when it comes to going to play football. I heard her talk about my dream is to play in the NFL. Sorry, but I don't know how many NAIA players are playing in the NFL in the first place. And ultimately, based on what I saw from your highlight reel, you've got zero chance. You probably won't play at the university you're going to. So, I mean, that's the stark reality. One thing we all know about playing this game, the likelihood of you getting hurt is 100%. You will get hurt.
Yeah.
Now, what is the severity of that injury? That would be where I would echo your concern, because there will be, and there always is, a few guys on each team that are going to go, oh, really?
On her own team. She's got commercials.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jealousy and envy. Yeah. She's got commercials.
Let's
her
test
own
you.
Team.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, to me, the social part, the impact on what it has for her later on, because I think, to your point, Jason, is this. Commercializing this has benefits now, but the long-term effect, okay? Mm-hmm. We know what it is, okay? In today's world of kind of getting things right, equality, you're putting her in a situation where you're basically using her to promote something, okay? And I don't think sometimes when you're in that moment because she wants it so bad, you don't see it.
Yeah.
You just don't see it because you want it so bad that I want to prove that I belong and I belong here. Mm-hmm. Give me the opportunity. But you don't see the other side, the people that are actually benefiting from using you. And that's the part that bothers me. Mm. It's not to dissuade her dream and say you can't do this, but look at the other side. What's the other agenda to why they're pushing this?
Listen, I'll say this for her and her family. She's getting to go to college.
Yep.
She got to move from Detroit to L.A. and somewhat, she, you know, you go from Detroit and wind up in Huntington Beach. That's quite the trip.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't go straight from Compton to Huntington Beach, but somehow she did, and then wound up on a football team, and then wound up in commercials. And literally, based on the research I was doing last night and this morning, I can't find any proof that she ever did anything in high school. The Detroit Pre-Press wrote about her as if she was a wide receiver. Never listed a stat.
Mm-hmm.
Basically said she got a start in one game. If a 22-year-old boy was on, young man was on those highlight tapes that we all watch, we'd be like, hey, man, this is dangerous. This is irresponsible putting this man out there, 22 years old. He's going to get hurt.
Yeah.
Because that is, when you go watch the highlights of, you know, they had her on kickoff team. And I guess, you know, she was either too slow or she was the safety. And they're calling things tackles that aren't tackles.
Yeah, I saw that a lot. The tackles, we call it the invisible man. When you make tackles on the sideline, not in the box, because you need that help.
Right.
The invisible man, the sideline. Every tackle I saw was with the invisible man. Right. And I was like, I'm just giving this an evaluation. And this is the beauty of what I'm saying and why it's going to sound non-PC is because we don't care. The beauty of being in a huddle in a locker room is my hand looks different than yours. I'm big, I'm bigger, you're smaller. You're stronger, I'm faster. It doesn't matter. This game will neutralize you. So I'm going to look at you like you're a player, not all, you're a story. So when we get on this field, you got to move another man against his will in the game of acreage. Good luck. Good luck with that. And so what? You could take a hit. Can you take the hits? That's what right. happens. The cumulative effect of playing a game.
It takes one to take you out. We've seen it
yeah.
with boys and men, and it's never pretty. Going all the way back to Daryl Stingley, to I can't remember the kid's name at Rutgers, but it's never pretty. And if this ever, just accidentally, because I'm sure they're going to try to protect her.
Right.
Because, again, this is about the narrative. But at some point, you can get hurt just by being there.
This is honest to goodness story. We had a guy walk on when I was at college, and I just played at little University of Idaho. Right?
Yep.
He walked on, and my coach came up to me before spring practice to go, I want this guy to quit by the end of the day. Because they didn't want to deal with it.
Right.
Yeah.
I said, okay.
Gotcha.
They lined him up over me. And there are people doing 5 to 10 for less than what I did to him in that practice. And he, to his credit, he lasted the whole practice, and then he turned in his equipment. And that's – now, that was in the 80s, and
yeah,
maybe
right.
it's a little bit different than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
But
well,
let me just tell you.
That will never happen. This is a rigged-up narrative.
But what you don't think somebody will test
oh, there's
that,
a play, there's a
there's
going to
be a player on their own team
who
will test
who
it.
Makes it this? To me, it's like the evaluation process.
Yes.
The coaching staff.
Yes.
Okay, when they get this news, what do they say? You know what I'm saying? How do they
there's
explain?
There's a donation to the school,
but
that, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, if it is, if it's an administrative idea here to get this done, as a coaching staff, when you go on to evaluate, you got to have the talk with the players. You're putting them in a situation where now they really can't coach. Because you're forcing their hand to kind of administer to what the administration wants. So from evaluation, what do you do
it
from a coaching staff?
It undermines the coaching staff,
right.
but it demoralizes the team. Think about this. When you are on a team of scholarships and there is a finite number that you can give out, and then you look around and one of those was given to someone you don't think that qualifies, oh, we start to get antagonized. We start to go at that person.
I would tend to think that the check cut was good enough that everybody got a little something.
Not the players.
No,
teammates.
You never know. There may be enough more scholarships to go around. Listen, this leads to, because, again, and I don't want to beat up Toni Harris because, you know what, it's great. She's going to college. She's going to get educated. She's from Detroit. She's survived ovarian cancer. Do we think there will ever be a time within our lifetime, the next 30, 40 years, where a woman will actually play college football at a position
in a real way?
I've had this conversation different ways with different star women athletes. I had a conversation with Lisa Leslie one time, just joking around. I was like, Lisa, if you played in the NBA, would you have given them buckets? She was like, Marcellus, do you understand what the NBA is about in terms of size, strength, mm-hmm. speed? She's like, it would have been a whole lot of hell to pay to get those buckets.
Right.
And that's Lisa Leslie, like yep. top five effort. No, I don't. There is a women's professional league. Let's show respect to that. Mm-hmm. There's an outlet for a woman who wants to play pro ball and play against other women who are professionals. But playing against the men, I just use my own story. I was a late bloomer. I was 14. My sister would whoop me up and down that apartment all day, every day. And then puberty hit. And then that voice dropped. And then my sister tried to whoop me up one more time. And without even much effort, it was like, no more of that.
Right.
And it's just what it is. So I don't think there's a day coming.
Is it, you know, we talked about maybe can a female be a punter, be a field goal kicker?
We have that
already. I know, that's what I'm saying. Right. So it's been done from that perspective in regards to that position. But the physical nature of the game itself, bro. I'm a big guy, and I played football in high school and in streets and everything. And the physical nature of it, you know, when a guy comes in who isn't mature enough to play body wise, you know he can't play.
Yeah. It's funny, basketball players say it all the time. Charles Barkley always says, I play football one play.
I'm gonna
and then got hit.
With y'all, but I'm going to disagree with y'all.
On.
Go ahead.
No, I just, yeah. I physically, in the next 20 years, do I think there's going to be.
I said 30 to 40 years.
Okay, 30 to 40 years? Do I think there's going to be a woman that can play at a major college?
No, I'm just college football. But go ahead, college football.
No.
I'm going to disagree with you.
I don't.
This is why. I think in 30 years, that'll be my window. I have seen, I go to these Adidas, Steve Clarkson football camps.
Mm-hmm.
And there I've seen some of Adidas' 7-on-7 big tournaments or whatever. And I've seen some young women that's 13, 14 years old, playing wide receiver. And not playing it at a high level, but competing.
Yeah. I've seen that.
Competing.
I've seen that.
And so I think there's some young people, and I'm just going, I think there's some young people from poor communities, women, that in another generation or two, we're going to see one that can play college football at the wide receiver position.
No, you're not. You know why? I know Steve. I've been to those camps, everything. And then one day, you're going to say, I'm ready to go play some real football. And coach is going to say, full pads. Game change.
I get what you're saying.
It's different.
But the bar won't be that high. I'm just saying, I've seen kids at this 7-on-7 that's far more legitimate than what we've seen with this Tony Harris.
I agree with that, too.
And so I just think in another 30 years, can somebody get out there and play a little wide receiver and make a catch or two? Look, man.
I just keep seeing the guys are growing the same rate the girls are.
Yeah, you've been in this booth too long. Go sideline passes and look at the game. Man, the boys are hitting.
Jason Whitlock, that's Marcellus Wiley.
Yeah.
Time to put on our thinking cap.
Gucci.
Boycott. Oh. Boycott.
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 Come on, man.
Well, you going to cancel me, too?
Mark Slareth and Jim Jackson are back.
Handsome, Marcellus.
As you all know, I'm a journalist, and we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer here, Marcellus Wiley. So we're going to take a deeper look at a big issue in the world of sports.
Yes.
Got a special cap for our Columbia grad, Darnell.
That Darnell. Yes,
Darnell's losing weight, man.
He is. Yeah, what are you doing? What you doing, man?
Hey, man, I'm on that treadmill every day.
That LA lifestyle makes you want to do that, don't it?
All right. Mm-hmm. All right.
Cauliflower french fries. Cauliflower.
Let's move to Kyler Murray, who made waves after spurning the MLB to pursue a career in football. The NFL Network reported this week that there's a concern among scouts that Kyler's father, Kevin, who was a star quarterback at Texas A&M, is actually calling the shots in Murray's career and could be a headache. Kyler's former coaches at Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley and Bob Stoops, say the report is untrue, but he's hardly the only African-American athlete in recent years whose parents have been criticized for being too involved with everyone from LeVar Ball to Annie Apple to Lamar Jackson's mom going under the microscope. Question here, is there a bigger issue here? Should we play the race card here? Or what's going on with the media as it relates to Kyler Murray and his dad? And I'm going to just say no, because my narrative on all professional sports is it's just a television show. And as more and more money pours into these TV shows, just like in real Hollywood, the more money that got poured into Hollywood, the more stage parents show up. Mm-hmm. And we've been criticizing stage parents in Hollywood for years, white, black, whomever. Mm-hmm. And now that there's all this money in professional sports, I don't halfway blame the parents for going along for the ride. It's too tempting. I would say I wouldn't do it, but that's easy to say from the sideline.
A mixed bag of nuts. You said don't play the race card? Let me look at my hand. Damn, all these cars say race. Yeah, it's the race card. Man, I'm going to play it right here because I was a part of the San Diego Chargers organization on the way out, but still deeply involved with it. And I remember when there was a involved parent to the tune of the most involved I've seen in NFL history, in Archie Manning telling the Chargers, oh, my son's not playing there. And I don't remember the negative connotations. I don't remember that being termed as meddling and interfering. But now, when you said it, is LeVar Ball, Eli Apple, Lamar Jackson, always, it starts off in a positive. Oh, he's using his mother as an agent. Oh, his mother is involved. And then it just, there's a problem. We are creating a monster. One, what we're seeing from Kyler Murray is unprecedented. It's never been done in history. Top 10, potentially number one overall in two sports. Mm-hmm. Bigger than Deion Sanders, bigger than Bo Jackson. So when I'm doing an interview for Dan Patrick and my dad is sitting there off camera saying, yes, no, maybe, we don't want to answer that because I am handling two industries where I have two mega lotto scratch and sniffs. And you sitting there getting mad at me for using my father for support, for guidance, when that should be the way. So daddy's not along for the ride because daddy was an All-American football player who was drafted out of high school to play baseball as well. So if I can't lean on my father, but I'm expected to get drafted and in a couple of months call this guy coach or yes, sir, or look at him as a father figure. Are you kidding me? My father figure is my father. So if I pause in moments of indecision, please don't criticize me and certainly don't take it to my family. Race card.
Yeah, I don't know about the race card. I understand what you're saying. I would say Archie Manning's got a little bit more clout based upon his NFL career and based upon his brother or Eli's brother Peyton and what he was able to do in the NFL as well. So that's NFL royalty, and I think, you know, that's a little bit different.
Good point.
I think one of the things that you have to look at from a parental standpoint is, you know, I have a son who's a professional athlete, and there have been many times where people during my son's college career where other parents were upset about however it was going. I'll never forget they were going to go to some administrator to talk about how the coach talked to the kids, and they wanted me to be on board with them. And I said, absolutely not. And I'm like, does your son aspire to be a professional baseball player? And they said, yes. And I go, do you think this is the worst they'll ever hear? If you're going to fight their battle here, are you going to be on the bus with them in the minor leagues? Are you going to do those things? You know, part of it, you have to give the guidance to let your kid navigate those situations. Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of parents that don't understand the pressures, that don't understand professional sports in general. Now, Kyler has an interesting situation, as you mentioned, with his father being an elite athlete, being drafted in baseball as well. And, you know, I'll take his coach's word at it that he wasn't meddling in any way, shape, or form. But, hey, man, as a parent, you're entitled to give your kids wise counsel. And I hope that's it. Unfortunately, there's been plenty that have overstepped their bounds. You know, when
Todd Marinovich.
Right. Todd Marinovich was one. I mean, you look at what LeVar Ball's doing. Yeah. Yeah. And when he's talking about, you know, when you're talking about, hey, I could beat Michael Jordan in one-on-one, well, instantly you're like, oh, come on, dude, stop. Stop that clown stuff. Yeah, but
you have a child that played, my son, okay, that mm-hmm. played. So I got personal experience and running AU programs. I run into parents all the time. And here's I think, the difference between the two. That the father, or a lot of times it's the father, who probably didn't make it, is living through a son a lot of times. Yeah. And that's the father you're going to have an issue with. Yeah. The one that didn't quite make it, but is doing everything and living through his son. And I see it all the time. And the child ends up getting a bad rap because of that. okay, he can be a great kid, but because of the father. And from the mom's perspective, the protection side of it. So for so many years, it was like a young kid comes out of school, you go hire this person, your family stays over here. But now the family got more involved, and now they have a voice. We have social media. They say something, it get blown up. Now it's, well, we got an issue with the family.
Right.
It depends on what degree that is. If it's more out of concern, I'm saying, listen, I think my son or my daughter is better fit here, and this is what I want, and it's not the demand part of it, they feel more comfortable. But once you start making demands on certain things, that's when it blows up and it's, well, it's an overbearing father.
Yeah, it's weird. The media narrative is a power trip. It's like controlling. Like, I have three kids, 19, mm-hmm. 3, and a 4-week-old. Trust me, when they turn 18, I'm not letting them go. When they turn 22, I'm not letting them go. Now, you want to sit there and deem that as overbearing or something. That is my child for life. Now, they're going to make their own decisions. They're going to speak for themselves. But if you're trying to say me sitting there shotgun with them and giving them support and guidance, which we're seeing from Mr. Murray with Kyler Murray, I don't understand why that's a negative. I don't understand how this story got led.
Well, I'm going to tell you why it's potentially a negative for an NFL franchise. You're partnering up with that quarterback. And what they'd like to do is just have a direct connect between the quarterback, the owner, the general manager, and the head coach. That's the partnership. And I say this because, again, the guy that I grew up with, that, again, me and Jeff George are really close. We tell each other we love each other. And he had a problem in terms of perception because of the closeness of his family. Teams in the NFL, the word got out, he's too close to his family. We can't establish the kind of connection we want with him because that connection in terms of football is more with his family than us. That is, and again, this is Jeff George, white quarterback. This conversation's been going on forever. And as Jeff George and I have talked about, it's like he got ridiculed because he loved his mama's dirty underwear and she loved his. And he got ridiculed for it. She was very close to him. And he, one day he called me and goes, how come the media didn't treat my family and me and my relationship with my mother the same way the media does Kevin Durant and his mama?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, why? Why couldn't I get that treatment? And his mother's passed from cancer. It's the closest person to him. And so I just think, Marcella, this goes along with people just like, hey, man, we're about to give this guy a lot of money and he's going to be we may take him. Our jobs could be dependent on his success. We want to partner with Kyler. Not so sure we want to partner right. with Kevin as well.
Well, why create the distance? All I ask is, as a father, and I would ask as Kyler, why would you want to create distance from what got me here? Why would you want to create distance from something that different has helped fuel me?
For discipline,
exactly.
No, it's a different discipline, the NFL.
I just want to be able to be honest. Like, I don't want, if I'm coaching you, I want to be able to coach you honestly and say, and I'm very honest with my son. I'm like, hey, man, you're not good enough here, here, and here. And until you fix these things, you're not going to be good enough. And let me tell you how professional athletics works. Hmm. Now, unfortunately, a lot of kids that get to this level, you know what their parents have said?
Oh,
boy, you know, like it's like these guys. It's like these guys that audition on singing shows. Well, my mom says I can sing. Well, you can't sing a lick. Your mom is lying to you.
Your mom,
you
know, loves you to death.
Your mama lied to you.
Yeah.
Lock and Wiley. Jim Iceberg Jim Jackson back with us.
Favorite part.
Time to get anti-social. All right, my favorite social media manager is also here.
There
Darnell
is.
Smith.
That's your only
right
one.
On Whitlock.
The only social media manager.
I better be your favorite.
My favorite kid.
Born right. Central Ball State's finest, Darnell Smith.
There he is.
Darnell and I.
Y'all feeling good today, man.
Yeah, it's Friday.
Yeah.
We off tomorrow.
Yeah. I ain't. I got to travel.
What's popping, Darnell?
Yeah, my Lakers got a big win last night. Yeah. Sorry, uh-oh. Marcellus.
Say it again.
My Lakers got a big win last night.
See?
LeBron came through with a double-double in the clutch, game-clinching three-pointer, but the internet seems more focused on this Lakers huddle in the first quarter. Looks like LeBron is ignoring Coach Luke Walton's game plan. Fellas, is Huddlegate something or nothing?
It's a little something.
It's a lot something. Stop that.
It's a little something.
Looks are deceiving, but that ain't. That is really something. One, it's the hand on the hip. Okay, you tired. But two, this wobble, that wobble means I know you're doing something and I'm supposed to be paying attention, but hurry up, bro.
Everything he does is going to be magnified, and he got to know that. He got to know that the cameras are on him at every time. Even if you're not paying attention. Sometimes,
he does know it. What some, if he does
yeah, you're right. You're right. Sometimes I'll be in the huddle and I know what the play is, and I may glance off, but I'm still trying to pick. Now, I ain't LeBron James, but
right.
When you do that.
And look at Kuzma.
Now, Caldwell Pope is looking at LeBron like, man, where you going, bro?
Let me tell you what the whole thing says.
What?
I'm activated. But I ain't that activated.
I'm not into this.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Man. Yeah, moving on to LeBron's A1 since day one, Dwayne Wade, the future Hall of Famer, banked in a game-winning three against the defending champs, and everyone seemed to have a good time. D-Wade, shout out Kobe post-game right here.
I wonder when Kobe hit that game-winner on me in L.A., when he hit it on the top, when he hit it on the glass for the top of the key, I said, how is that possible? Thank you for showing me the way, Mamba mentality.
Should D-Wade hang on for another season or two like Kobe did?
I don't understand why he has a great moment and got to put some shine on Kobe.
I know.
You know why?
He ain't got to put no shine on
Kobe. He the second greatest of all time. We've been through this with a lot.
Who?
What? Kobe? Come on now. We're not doing this again.
Third best shooting guard gave props to second best shooting guard. I respect it. Were those cornrows?
Yeah, you see him?
He going to play some more if he got cornrows.
Hey, listen. He's still feeling a little spry. And, you know, he going through that period of time, that phase. You know, I would love to see him play one more, but I think you should go out when you feel good and you're on top. I mean, he's going through the whole celebration thing. You don't want it to be false in regards to now, let me get one more year in. And you went kind of through this whole thing of everybody thanking you. Then the next time is really not as sincere. And right now, he's going out as the man.
Yeah. Dirk going through the same kind of indecision as well.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you know what? Find me something better to do than be on an NBA team and travel around the
country. But Dirk is going to work for the organization. Yeah. And D-Wade has a chance to probably work for the Heat.
Ain't nothing better than being in that uniform, though.
Yeah,
trust
me, right.
I know. I ain't been in it so long, but I missed that thing.
Are we setting ourselves up for a Jason Witten situation? Dwayne Wade going to go broadcast and come back one more?
I don't, he has a place out here. Gabrielle's out here, so they're out here a lot. Yeah. So he has a lot of options, but I know one thing, he still loves to play. He still loves to play. Now, he's a little bit different. He's adding a little bit more value
than
Dirk.
Speak for yourself with Whitlock, Wiley, and Wade.
Wait a minute. You say Jeff George and you talk about y'all love each other. Now you add another dude here?
Whitlock, Wiley, and Wade? Hold up.
What about horse meat over here?
What about I take Gabrielle over there. We need that. Diversity.
The entertainment purpose of it right there.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, sticking with hoops, NBA champion Nick Young thinks Trae Young, no relation, has played his way into the Rookie of the Year conversation. Swaggy P tweeted, I know Luka started off killing, but that boy Trae making a strong case for Rookie of the Year. That last name means buckets. And then he followed up with, like I said earlier, Trae making the case for Rookie of the Year. Mm. Is Trae Young really making the case for Rookie of the Year?
Yes, he's making a great case for second place in Rookie of the Year voting. He's making a great case. Luka's the Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
Stop it, Nick.
No. He's making a great case. What happened in college football this year? Mm. Front runner, Heisman, all year long, right? And then what happened at the end? Damn, what happened to him? Oh, Kyler Murray, you could finish strong and actually eclipse someone. Plus, I had this argument about a month ago at Pat's, shout out to my little dive bar.
Okay.
And we were in there hydrated, yelling, Trae Young.
Hydrated.
And we were talking about Trae Young like, this boy is coming. I think he's coming.
Yeah, he's coming, but the storyline is still Doncic. That's the storyline. And NBA loves storyline.
Tua.
No, come on. Hold up. That was the difference.
What? Go.
You got me on that one.
Who could Doncic be compared to Magic and Bird?
Because he's a European superstar coming in. Trae Young has been up and down.
What?
Only part of Luka is early in the season when he had to get his feet wet. Once that happened, he just took off. Yeah. He didn't have the up and down. So Trae coming on at the end, that's fine. That's like Ayton. Coming on at the end is fine. Mm.
He won't win it, but I'm saying I just saw it happen in college football.
It makes a great conversation.
Luka might have next. Ain't nobody arguing that Trae Young has next.
Oh, really?
He got next after Luka.
No one argues Steph Curry had next with that shot making the building. And then, now what happens? Can't guard him.
I'll give you that.
Now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
It's Darnell. This is my guy. My guy. My question of the day. My question of the day.
Had that sky cam in that weight room, didn't they?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
All right, guys. So there's been a lot of deep discussions online about cats and dogs.
Deep discussion.
Oh, wow. And my man Marcellus, I know you got some strong opinions on this topic, so I'm going to start off with you.
Yes, sir.
Are you a cat or dog person?
Oh, it's not even close. I'm a cat person, man. Shout out to Hashtag. What? COD, baby, cats over dogs. Let me tell you why. One, they're independent. They ain't sitting there all needy and every 5 seconds got to walk me, feed me, do something for me. They are just on their own schedule. You ain't got to wear no leash, no choke chain, no collar. You ain't got to do none of that. You just leave a cat and they just going to love you because they love you, not because they need you and you need them. So I just take cats over dogs.
I was raised as an anti-cat person. My mother can't stand cats.
What do you mean anti?
When she was a kid, a cat jumped on her back. And so my mother petrified the cats. We couldn't have them nowhere around us. I'm clearly a dog person.
Clearly a dog person. Dobies, Rotties, I love dogs. Listen, my boy I grew up with, man, they had about 10 cats in the house, bro.
Okay.
I like it.
Independence.
They're all in between the couch everywhere, and they're sneaking around.
They're smart.
Sneaking up on you.
It ain't sneaking.
I'm like, man, go. Listen, you know what your problem is? See, you didn't have a dog, you didn't get them trained. Nah. That's your problem.
Hold on.
When you train my best friend that must obey? When you train a dog... He'll let you know when he need to go to the bathroom. You don't need a leash.
I respect all that. But
you can't hood train
him.
But
what's all this connection? Like, they got to listen to me and here's a treat. Cat, like, treat what? I get what I want. I clean up after myself.
I'm
independent up in here.
They do, but they be around the corner somewhere doing some other stuff, scratching stuff up.
Hold on. So, what about when you're dating someone? You prefer your partner have a cat or a dog? That's different.
Oh, I think it's very different.
Sneaky.
No, I think it's very sneaky. I've actually thought this through.
Yeah.
Date a woman with a cat, early on, it's great. Because she can come over, stay the night, she ain't got to worry about
the week. Dog.
Stay the week. Big bowl of food.
You got a dog, I got to go home, blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Right, yeah.
But as you get deeper into a relationship,
what?
It's like, she got something to do. She got to go be with her dog. I got some space.
So you flipped it.
I got some space.
It was cool.
You are super single. The phases of getting out of a relationship by Whitlock.
Hey, I kind of agree with you, though.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need your space.
Yeah.
With a dog excuse, you always got it. Listen, like me,
because
I got a dog, you know what? I got to go walk my dog.
You can't even sleep in, Jimmy.
I can't.
Look at the bags under your eyes, Jimmy.
I can sleep.
You can't sleep in.
I can sleep.
With a cat, you can't.
You got to sit on the lawn.
That's right.
Cats over dogs, hashtags.
Whitlock and Wiley, Jim Jackson is back. We're joined now by NBA insider Chris Haynes. Nice suit.
I mean, he church clean up in this stuff.
Drip, drip.
No, that's drip. That's that new Yahoo money.
Man, Yahoo playing like that, Chris?
Yeah, see the butter all right.
All right, let's move to Boston, where the Celtics' disappointing regular season continued last night with a loss at home to the Blazers. It was the fourth straight loss for Boston, but after the game, Kyrie Irving made it clear he's tired of hearing about the team's recent struggles.
Yeah, you can't worry about the standings now. It's too late in the season. As long as we get there, I mean, I can't wait for this. All this other BS about regular season and keep getting better and talking over and over and over and again about what we can do to keep getting better in the regular season.
What's your confidence level in the team going forward?
What do you mean?
Just in terms of, like, you know, you got
another question. What
question is that? A legitimate question. I mean, I just, you know,
nah.
How do you feel about this team?
Okay, next question.
Man, Kyrie got a lot of buckets last night, but I think his attitude is a problem, and I think Kyrie is a problem in Boston.
I don't think he's the problem. I think there is a problem in Boston, and no one is being fully transparent about this, so they're punting the issue down the field and saying, okay, when it matters most in the postseason, we're going to hit the switch, and we'll deal with that issue then, and we'll play ourselves into success, and that won't happen. The issue is twofold for me. One, Brad Stevens, wonder coach. I'm not hearing the genius of Brad Stevens. I'm going to let
you. It's been quiet.
It's been quiet, right. That criticism, and I need to hear a little more of a roar from that. But Gordon Hayward, I get it. This is where I become heartless in sports. We grade you because they're grading you when you're on the court, injured or not, coming off injury or not. And imagine being on a team that went to Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals. Then you add Kyrie, and you think you're going to be great. And then you got a guy getting 27 minutes a game, and he's averaging 11 points. Now, is this a charity case we're doing out here, or are we really just going to evaluate players for what they are? He's under a guaranteed contract. He's not going anywhere. work on your game, do something, but you're giving this guy starter minutes and getting bench production. And I think all the guys notice this. And then when you're a guy like whoever it could be, Jason Tatum, you got to go on the bench or whatever it may be, and you're Marcus Smart, and he's like, I'm not getting burned, and this dude's out there getting burned, I think that could eat up a locker room.
Well, look, Gordon Hayward, I kind of feel sorry for him because he's not back to form, obviously. He's still trying to work himself into the mix. The Boston Celtics have invested a lot of money, time, resources, and trying to get this guy back on the floor. So I understand what they're trying to do and giving him as much minutes as possible without hurting the team to see if he can regain some type of form that he had in Utah. Now, with all that being said, I agree with you 100%. I don't necessarily think Kyrie is the problem, but he's the face of the problem over there in Boston. And for some reason, I just think people are kind of hiding. I brought up Brad before, but they kind of like hiding this guy, shielding him, when all we heard last year was he was the next coming to Phil Jackson. He knows how to push every single button. His X's and O's are the best. And there's no doubt about it. I think X's and O's wise, coaching, his structure, his discipline, everything is great. It's impeccable. But when it comes to managing egos, when you have to sit a player down, talk to him, have some dialogue, say, hey, how can we get on the same page? Build the relationship. That's what I'm not hearing coming from the Boston Celtics. And then Kyrie, just a bad dynamic, a mix of his ego and things of that nature. So I think those kind of blend together is why we are where we're at with the Celtics.
Well, we're talking about spreading the blame around because it can't just go on one person, one individual. Let's start with coaches. You talk about this. To me, in the regular season, coaches manage minutes, egos, and injuries. That's what they do during the regular season. And once you get in the playoffs, that's when you really dive into the X's and O's. Brad Stevens' background was one at Butler where he had overachievers. Okay? He can allow the locker room to really police itself because they weren't overly talented, so they bought in. When you're successful, everything you do now is like, oh, A+. Oh, he's doing well. There's no conflict last year. He didn't have that. Things were rolling. This year now, he couldn't really dive into holding people accountable, okay? So that's one issue. Second issue, we talked about this yesterday. Young players now feel it's my time. I got to come in here and prove myself based on what I did last year. I need to get better. My next contract is coming up. I want to be the guy. I'm anointed next. You're dealing with that. Kyrie, okay, as the face of an organization, you have to be responsible to handle this tough situation. Okay? When you don't feel like it, when you don't feel like answering the question, when you don't feel like playing, you may be a little hurt, you're the guy, okay? And he's not handling that part well. So when you put all of that together, and the main person you don't hear from that's probably the most stable is Al Horford, okay? He's out of the mix. That's a guy that should provide the stability for the team, and you don't really hear from him from that. So you got all this stuff going on. You wonder why the Celtics are struggling. It's a mixture of, it's like gumbo, bro.
Yeah.
Bad gumbo.
Bad. I still go back to Kyrie, and it's just like his words here. To me, you can hear him and think he's saying, hey, once we get to the playoffs, it's really going to matter and things are going to work themselves out. What I actually hear is a guy, can't wait till we get to the playoffs and get this. Because, it's win or go home at some point in the playoffs, and he can go home and I can go to New York, I can go with Kevin Durant, I can start something new because this here ain't working.
Kyrie, a couple games ago, said in response to one question, go ask Brad Stevens, go ask Brad. Mm-hmm. And to your point, do you think he's being handcuffed? Like, when you know there's a problem, when you know this is the problem, but that guy is being protected and coached to the point where you are the face and you're taking all the hits, but you can't call him out? You think that's the dynamic?
I don't think he's being protected, though. I think Brad Stevens' resume is his resume. The guy had incredible success at Butler. Mm-hmm. When he came into the NBA, incredible success. Took that team to the Eastern Conference Finals. That's going to buy you some leeway.
It does.
And deservedly so.
Is it buying Kyrie the leeway to hit the game-winning shot in the NBA Finals and be
him some leeway, and that's why he got to take – he takes the most shots. He gets – you know, despite the team being successful, he gets to be the guy. Whitlock and Wiley, Iceberg Jim Jackson and Chris Haynes are back. Let's return to the NBA. Well, LeBron and the Lakers beat the Pelicans last night, but not without a little help from New Orleans, who played Anthony Davis just 20 minutes and sat him for the duration with just under 5 minutes to play in the third quarter of a close game. For his part, Davis said it was tough for him to sit out during crunch time. I watched this game last night, and this was embarrassing for me just as an NBA fan and a basketball fan, that I'm watching a game like, oh, this ain't even a real game. That the New Orleans Pelicans aren't have virtually no interest in winning, and we get it when teams tank, but this is like on a different level. The second best player, or arguably the best player in that game, doesn't play after midway through the third quarter. That's crazy, and it just puts a big, when you got LeBron on the court, it just puts a big highlight and focus on the fact, oh man, some of these games just don't matter at all.
Mm-mm. Yeah, it's a bad look if you think about it. Neither side is winning. It's crazy, the NBA, I guess, in a tug of war with the New Orleans Pelicans, and in any negotiation, you want to win-win. And if not that, at least a win for one side, neither side is winning. Think about it, the NBA is like, okay, you got to put them out there. Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, we're going to put them out there, but not in crunch time, not in meaningful time. And then New Orleans is not winning as well because they're not letting their franchise player play the 37 minutes he was playing all year until his demand. So I don't know which way is up in this situation. Just a horrible look for the NBA.
It's a bad look because, one, I feel for Alvin Gentry, who was my assistant coach at Phoenix, because this goes on his resume as losing, okay? So he's preaching to a team about winning and, you know, finishing out the season, but yet and still organization says the best player has to sit down. Teammates, same thing. Why would I want to be here? Okay, you asking me to go out there and put it on the line, but you're not giving me the opportunities to win, okay? And it's a tough situation because the NBA says, Chris, as you know, you can't sit a player if he's not hurt. Okay, well, we don't want our franchise player to get hurt, so we'll play him in the first quarter, second quarter, third. He may get hurt in the first. Listen, when I tore my ankle up, it was 7 minutes in the game in the first quarter. He can get hurt in the first quarter as he can in the fourth. It's just a bad look all the way around.
We've had incidents or precedents that when a player is not a part of the of that team's future, they sit that player. They did it with Eric Bledsoe. They did it with J.R. Smith, numerous other
Chandler
players.
Parsons.
Chandler Parsons. But the problem is Anthony Davis is of a superstar caliber. And I think if they were allowed, if the NBA sat back and like, first of all, he shouldn't be playing. He shouldn't be playing. I'm usually all for the players and their right and their freedom to do what they feel. But in this regard, New Orleans has everything to lose in allowing this kid to continue to play. He has an injury history. And so one thing why the NBA's integrity is being killed with this situation right now, because you're playing them 22, 23 minutes. Everybody knows what you're going to do. They know that you're not really not out there trying to win, even though the game was close. The game is close. The Pelicans got a shot, and then they pull Anthony Davis for the remaining 15 minutes of the game. That just looks so dumb on many levels. That's why this is looking like a blunder. If they want to, if they need to sit him, the NBA needs to allow the Pelicans to sit him the remainder of the season.
But what's weird about it is Porzingis got traded for value, and he was injured. So this whole like narrative that he can't play because if he gets hurt, it's going to kill his trade value. Is that really going to be the thing? Anthony Davis is on a trade market. You think they're not going to be?
But I think when you're a small market team, and the injury history that Anthony Davis does have, they have to protect themselves.
Max value.
They got to get max value. They got to protect themselves.
Marcellus, I was going to go to, and you can help me, because would anything like this ever happen in football?
No.
I can't.
You know why? Football, and I learned this being a player rep for 9 years, they talk about uniformity. So you got to think about the umbrella of the NFL. It's really about the jerseys and the name on the front. So a lot of interchangeable parts, including, as long as you're playing under the umbrella of the NFL, we don't care, small market, big market, you go to this team, to this team. NBA is star-driven. You guys talk about the individual. So now it gets individualized with the player and the team. Which team is this, though? Is this a small market team? Is this beneficial for the league? So when you have those kind of fragments, all of a sudden, you're not looking at it like this is for the greater good of the league. You're talking about just one market or one player. That's why there's contradiction. Eric Bledsoe, go ahead. Yeah. Oh, you a superstar? No, you can't. But in the NFL, they just think about it all under one umbrella NFL.
This is a problem I think they need to fix.
They meaning the NBA?
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. It's a counterintuitive. We don't want you to tank, but you got to do this, okay? They know that New Orleans, from the perspective of where they're at, has to maximize Anthony Davis, okay? They know that. in the office, but yet and still you're forcing their hand to have to play a guy they're trying to protect. So what's the options for the NBA? Because this is a rule already in place. What's their option?
I think one of the things they're going to have to address, like, they're going to have to go really big picture, because the max contracts you can get from your hometown teams don't seem to be enough incentive to keep those guys loyal. So maybe they're going to have to go even further, make it even more financially beneficial to re-sign with your...
But here's the thing. Agents are smart. How they got around the max salary contracts, super max, is, okay, we'll circumvent it. We'll do 1-2-year deals, get our bird rights, and we'll circumvent it. It's always going to be a different avenue from an agent's perspective. And keep in mind, free agency is a fallacy. Because if I'm an unrestricted free agent, I should be able to go to market and get what the market bears. By restricting me to say I can only make the most here at my home team and not in the market is not really free agency.
Yeah, and it came back to bite them. They thought Supermax was going to just be the glue. Yep. You're not going anywhere. You get a Supermax.
These teams
Who has signed a Supermax? One person?
These teams have 7 to 8 years with these players under contract to show these players that they should be committed to this organization because we're trying to do the right thing.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for NFL draft prospect Kyler Murray. Mm-hmm. Uncle Jimmy.
Kyler Murray. Looking a mess over there.
What is, you got Madesa's draws on today?
Oh, we got jokes. We got jokes, huh, son?
We got jokes, huh, son? Look, I tried to call you last night, couldn't get a hold. What'd you do last night? I tried to get a hold of you, couldn't.
Oh, man, I was watching the Michael Jackson story, man.
Oh, no. Oh, please. No. Stop. No. All right, here we go. No. Here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about Kyler Murray.
Leave him alone.
There's a concern among scouts that Kyler's father, Kevin, who was a star quarterback at Texas A&M, is actually calling the shots in Murray's career and could be a headache.
LeVar Ball, Eli Apple, Lamar Jackson, always... It starts off in a positive. Oh, he's using his mother as an agent. Oh, his mother is involved. And then it just, there's a problem. We are creating a monster.
All right. You know, we didn't get to talk about it earlier, Marcel, but it's been a great day for Kyler Murray at the combine, measured at 5'10", a little taller than most people thought, 207 pounds. Right. Been a great day for Kyler Murray. Anyway, Uncle Jimmy, what's your take on Kyler Murray?
So Kyler Murray is an inch taller than everybody thought. An extra inch. I'm not remotely surprised. You know, we blessed like that.
Here you go. Will you stop? You stop talking about
seriously.
That?
Look. Hey, man, I think this young kid is going to set the NFL on fire, man. He's going to be better than Faker Mayfield, better than Russell Wilson.
Oh, wow. You went there?
And the Cardinals better go get him first chance they get.
How come? Why?
Damn, boy, you sound like Buffalo when they heard you got signed.
Damn.
Because of who his daddy is. Man, his daddy ain't remotely the problem, man. His daddy the reason he gonna be great. Man, this ain't no LeVar Ball situation. This is a black Archie Manning. This is a black Oliver Luck situation. Mm-hmm. Man, his daddy's a two-time All-American at Texas A&M at quarterback. Now that's the formula for quarterback greatness.
Preach, exactly. That's it.
Well, you got one more time, Marcellus, to interrupt me.
I'm trying to agree with you. We be interrupting.
I wasn't finished.
It sounds like it. Look at you.
You can't compare Kyler Murray's daddy to LeVar Ball. LeVar averaged 2 points in college.
Buckets.
Kevin Murray was a two-time All-American. Kevin Murray was his own, he had his own athletic accomplishments.
Uh-huh.
You know, this ain't his first rodeo, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, he done been here before.
Uh-huh.
Lonzo was LeVar's first real major accomplishment, let's be honest.
Hey, that's a little harsh,
ooh,
man.
Ooh, don't do
got
that.
Got a scholarship to Washington
Thank
State.
Thank you. Played
NFL
in the league.
Tryout.
He played in the NFL.
He had a tryout.
Oh, so now I gotta be the bad guy. So now Uncle Jimmy's supposed to be impressed. I used to referee LeVar's games at the Compton YMCA. Boy, it wasn't pretty.
What, the YMCA or his game?
Hey, real talk, Lonzo Mama's the athlete in that family. LeVar, basketball,
Tina,
fake news. Just like the little girl who wants to play for the Seattle Seahawks. Fake news.
That's fake news. You watching the whole show, I like that.
Yeah, respect.
That's good. That's a nice little touch at the end. Fake news. Let me go to Kyler Murray. and my approval rating for the young quarterback.
Kyler or Kevin? Kevin.
Tyler. This okay. Is for Tyler. Kevin's the dad. Job performance, I'm going to give him a 22, just because there's not a long work resume here. He started for 1 year.
Does it have to be long? If he win the Heisman, how long you want it?
I just need more work. Oh. All-time greatness, he won the Heisman. I'm going to go to 14. We'll see where he goes in the draft.
That's low.
Yeah, look, man, there's a lot of Heisman Trophy winners that aren't memorable. Didn't Chris Winkie win the Heisman or something like
you
that?
You knew his name.
Yeah,
you know, memorable.
Character 21, he bailed on Major League Baseball.
He had options. Wow.
He bailed on Major League
Can't date them both.
Authenticity of 20. Overall total, 77, an all-star for Kyler Murray.
He has said nothing wrong, done nothing wrong, so that's why he gets 25s at the bottom of character. Authenticity. Job performance, the dude was a beast, came out of nowhere and became the Heisman Trophy winner. All-time status, I can't give you a 25 there, but you destroyed the college ranks. Look forward to you doing it at the pro level. And so far at the combine,
he's doing perfect in everything, myself.
Damn near. Look,
what you doing? You setting him up? He can only go down. I got it so he can really only go
down. Oh, that's what you want to do? Create narrative for him? I think he can handle
who
pressure.
The hell is he? Hercules? You on top of him. How he gonna come up?
Hey, everyone. Jason Whitlock here. Thank you for listening to the Speak for Yourself podcast. I want to tell you about another podcast from Fox Sports that we're very excited about. It's Waltrip Unfiltered, featuring two-time Daytona 500 winner Michael Waltrip. Michael will be speaking with the biggest names in NASCAR each week and discussing the biggest storylines in the sport, like Daytona 500 winner Denny Hamlin. Episode 1 is available already. Subscribe and listen to Waltrip Unfiltered right now. Let's get the show rolling.